Time now for Labor Press, your source for daily labor news and industry information. Hear discussions on the workplace and interesting talk from prominent and influential personalities in the labor community. And now your hosts, Neil Tippel and Bill Holfeld.
Accountability. Welcome to Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz here on AM 970. I'm your host, Joe Maniscalco. I'm the senior editor at laborpress.org. And we're glad that you tuned in because we have a great show. We're going to be talking about the Spectrum Strike. And we're also going to be talking about a little group that's pretty prevalent here in New York City called Revney and their relationship to our own Senator Chuck Schumer. And there's a very important labor management conference coming up in February that we're also going to get a lot of great details about. But first up, we're going to be talking to Candace Johnson from the Communication Workers of America, CWA. And we're going to be talking about what a couple of corporations have been doing with the giant tax cut that they just got. Candace, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Joe. I'm so glad to be on with you.
Well, we're very happy to have you. Candace, can you start out by talking about what's happening at American Airlines and the labor dispute that you guys are involved in?
Yes, glad to. CWA represents about 25,000 workers total at American Airlines, passenger service agents at the mainline carrier, and also at Piedmont and Envoy, which are part of American. And at both of those carriers, we've been in long-term negotiations to get a fair contract. And workers at Piedmont and Envoy earn about half as much as their counterparts at the mainline airline, despite having to do, you know, almost all of the jobs. They work at the smaller regional airlines. They make sure that customers and the planes get fed, you know, to the hubs, which all the airlines seem to want to do these days. They work hard, yet this company, American Airlines, again, very profitable, is stonewalling in contract negotiations and refusing to reach a contract that would provide fair wages and living wages to these workers.
But Candace, weren't all the workers, of American Airlines and the rest of corporate America, weren't they expecting a $4,000 raise after the giant tax cuts that the corporations were given?
Right, you would think so, yes. CWA very strongly opposed the tax cut. We still do, because it is it's a giveaway to corporations at the expense of the rest of us. But what President Shelton did was say, okay, if this tax cut's going to go forward, we're going to make sure that working people at these companies where we represent workers get this $4,000 a year that the president promised, that Republican leaders promised. So we contacted the CEOs of American Airlines, of AT&T, for example, Verizon, many of our biggest employers, to say, okay, we expect this pay increase, and we expect new jobs to be created. That's another critical part, supposedly, of this corporate tax plan. And unfortunately, we're seeing the reverse when it comes to AT&T. So at American, the company said it would give workers a $1,000 bonus. Everybody's glad to get a bonus. Everybody's glad to get, you know, a payment. But it's a one-time payment. Better that American should come to the bargaining table and negotiate fair contracts with the workers at Piedmont and Envoy who need a raise. They need a full-time raise.
Right. So instead of getting the raise that they deserve, they got basically lunch money and told to be happy with that.
Yes, basically, and it's unfair. Workers are very frustrated at our airports, and if your listeners are traveling, you may have seen in December, and we're going to have another round of actions in January, and we're going to keep it up as long as it takes. Our agents, our members are mobilizing. They're leafleting passengers. They're turning up the heat both on Envoy and Piedmont so that these negotiations go someplace. There's also a petition that Piedmont and Envoy members are asking all supporters to sign. It's a petition to members of Congress saying, look, you need to step in. Workers here deserve a raise. And it's long past due that these critical passenger service agents don't get a fair contract.
Well, Candace, before we continue, why don't you let people know where they can take part in that petition?
Thank you. Yes, there's a website called Envoy Agent. It's ENVOY, the company, envoyagent.org, and you'll see the link to the petition there, and you can click on it and show your support for these workers who work very hard in the smaller airports, as I'm sure you and many of your listeners are familiar. You do every job. You help the customers. You know, you check in the customers. You might have to check in the bags. You might have to load the bags. You might have to service the airplane. You do every job to make sure that these planes, you know, get off on time. And you make a lot of money for American Airlines. So it's time that that these workers get a fair contract.
Well, and I know that at least the airport workers here in New York City, I know that some of them make so little that they actually qualify for food stamps.
That's absolutely right. Food stamps and other sorts of public assistance. You know, some of them make less than $11 an hour or even less. And, you know, that's not a wage anybody can live on, especially in a bigger city, but anywhere, really. And it's long overdue. It's poverty-level wages for people who do a very critical job for American Airlines and, frankly, help make this airline so profitable.
And it wasn't, Candace, only the GOP politicians promising these raises and more jobs. It was actually corporations themselves that were promising these things. But we see here, you know, with American Airlines, that's not the case. And another great example is AT&T. They're actually cutting jobs.
Not only exactly is AT&T cutting jobs, it's continuing to send work offshore, to send call center jobs, good call center jobs overseas. It continues to contract out work while at the same time it wants to cut jobs here. You're right. The CEO of AT&T, Randall Stephenson, spent a lot of time last year from the beginning of the year till the end of the year saying, you know, if this tax cut goes through, we're going to invest more than $1 billion and that's going to create 7,000 to 8,000 good family supporting jobs. Well, we've seen none of that. So the companies, they all got their big corporate tax cut, but workers are getting the shaft.
You hear that, workers? Republican voters out there, that's the thing that you're supporting.
And it's very frustrating. And so we're on the AT&T and with these other companies, we're mobilizing members in a lot of our districts because AT&T is organized geographically. Our members are wearing black. They're pointing out the hypocrisy, really, of this big, extremely wealthy company sending jobs overseas, contracting out while it's laying off workers here.
It's totally, totally unbelievable. And Candace, I know that there is actually legislation that was introduced last year to try to put an end to the call center offshoring. Is that a bill that you're familiar with? And can you talk about what you guys might be doing legislatively to try to head off these kind of job losses?
Yes, that's definitely a bill that we've been pursuing not only at the federal level, but in the states as well, too. And surprisingly, we've been having some success in the states. In Ohio, for example, and other states in the Midwest, in New York, in a number of states, state legislatures are looking at this, have passed call center legislation that at least says if a company is going to send jobs overseas, the company has to alert customers that it's happening. It has to give customers the option to be able to request to be transferred back to a U.S. Operator, and then also to make these big companies ineligible for loans and grants and other state assistance. I mean, what too often we see is that a company moves into an area, opens up a call center because it gets big, you know, tax breaks from the state and maybe tax breaks from the local community. And then 2 years later, all the jobs are gone. And we need to put a stop to that. So, you know, given the makeup of Congress right now, it's a tough fight on the federal level. But there is some bipartisan support for this as well, too.
Right.
So we're pushing forward, and we hope to be able to get this kind of legislation.
Well, Candace, in about the minute and a half that we have left, give people some places, some things to do beyond you know, filling out the petition on how they could help strike a blow against this latent corporate greed.
I would ask, if you're traveling, if you're in any of these smaller airports and you see Envoy or Piedmont agents leafleting, you know, let them know you stand with them. Let them know that you know, that this corporate greed has got to stop. We're also we'll be ramping up our fight against AT&T, so there'll be other actions as well too. Your listeners can keep up with what everything we're doing at CWA's homepage, which is cwa-union.org. It's time all of working people have to mobilize, have to stand up together. We can do this. We can turn back this attack on you know, basic. You know, basic living standards and the basic rights of working people, and that's what we intend to do.
Great. Candace, thanks a lot. I think we're going to leave it there. Everybody, we've been speaking to Candace Johnson, spokesperson for CWA, and you're listening to Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz here on AM 970 The Answer, and we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Labor Press on AM 970 The Answer. We return now to Labor Press with your hosts, Neil Tappel and Bill Holfeld.
Together we'll stand, divided we'll fall. Come on now, people, let's get on the ball and work together. Come on.
Welcome back to Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz here on AM 970 The Answer. I'm your host, Joe Maniscalco, senior editor at laborpress.org. And I just want to remind everybody, if you like us, follow us on Twitter at LaborPressNY. Visit the website at laborpress.org and also email us at bcb@laborpress.org, and also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Right now, we're going to be talking about the Spectrum strike, now in its 10th month. We have the leadership of IBEW Local 3 with us right now, Chris Erickson, business manager, Lance Van Arsdale, assistant business manager, and Derek Jordan, business representative. Fellas, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Joe.
All right, dear.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Happy New Year. So, Chris, let's start off with you. Where are we right now? This strike started back in March. It's now we're in January of 2018. What's happening?
Well, you know, this company has implemented terms back in the somewhere in, I guess it was around June, Lance. Do you know when that happened? Was it June? And basically, didn't stop negotiating, but basically said they were done, you know. And as you know, this strike has been over the company's insistence that the members give up their union medical plan and their union defined benefit pension fund, which they've participated in for more than 40 years as Time Warner employees, and have actually paid for those benefits. Every time there was a contract and the settlement was 3% in each year, and they needed to put a percent to maintain the medical or improve the pension, they took it out of that package. So these members have paid for these benefits for over this 40-year period. And now you got a company comes in and basically says, we know what's in your best interest. And, of course, when the company tells you what's good for you, you know, you should run the other way. And basically that's what happened here.
And just to remind everybody, Chris, we're talking about 1,800 people. That's right.
You know, the number was 1,800 is the number that's been out there. It was probably closer to 1,700. And that number has dwindled down somewhat with the number of people that are still actively on strike. Many have retired. Some have crossed the picket line. And some have just disappeared, you know, and have given up on ever going back to work for Spectrum. But we're maintaining, you know, their medical benefits were intact for 9 months. Some of them We put together a program for them to go out to work, which reestablished their medical coverage for them and their families. So we rotated 500 strikers through a program where they went out for 4 weeks, and we'll continue to rotate in and out of employment where they'll be able to maintain their medical. The unemployment, unfortunately, is run out, and the membership of Local 3, the construction membership, took an action to assess themselves, a 0.5% assessment, which will generate enough money for 6 months in order to pay the extended unemployment, or the equivalent of what unemployment was, for probably another 8 weeks. So the membership is supporting. We continue to get donations into the strike fund from the affiliates, and we appreciate that. The strikers cost the union over $4 million. So we're under a little bit of a pressure here, and we're dealing with a multi-billion-dollar corporation here that pretty much is taking the hard line, playing hardball, and kind of indicates that they're not interested in participating in the union benefit plans, and it's a basically take it or leave it. And
yeah, Chris, I think you said last time that, this was their strategy all along, to try to starve you out, and it seems that that's what they're trying. That's what they're.
Yeah, that doing. And you know, whether or not you know. And in March, when a year has passed, they'd be in a position to possibly decertify the union. Like I said, they hired replacement workers. They've got scabs in there, and they have guys that cross the picket line. That's always a problem if you were to settle and go back, you know, internally. But the fact is that the union has made two offers. We brought a mediator in back at the end of November, and we made an offer that pretty much dropped all of the demands that the union had, and basically said we would finish out a 28-month contract with no changes, right, and just allow the strikers to continue to participate in the pension and welfare. And we met with them, with the negotiating committee, and they rejected that. We went back around December 20th. I met with the mediator and a representative of the company, and the union made a significant offer where we've moved off our position. Now, we have not met with the membership. The committee was aware of this proposal and authorized me to have that discussion, but I have not, you know, presented it fully to the body, and so I'm not anxious to be specific here, other than to tell you that we basically moved significantly to a point where we protect our members and they can protect new hires. And so I put that out there, and again, it was December 20th. After a 20-minute conversation that has been misrepresented by the company to the employees that are there, they rejected the proposal. And at that point, you know, it's like you really don't have anywhere else to go. So the strike is going to continue. And there are a number of things that are happening to support this strike, as much as, you know, the AFL-CIO, we are asking them to put Charter on the national boycott list. We've got the IBW is organizing and handing out pledge cards at Charter locations in 41 states. That's pressure. I don't want to lay it all out. You know, they know what's happening, but there are NLRB charges against Charter for having restricted IBW members from hand-billing service locations when the strike started. About Charter's customer service, and that resulted in a number of charges in probably 9 or 10 regions under the NLRB, and that's being coordinated through counsel in D.C.
And Chris, there's also a lawsuit that the Attorney General launched against them.
Yeah, that is still pending, right. And it's my understanding there was a meeting in Washington just a couple of weeks ago with other attorney generals from states that have expressed an interest passed and are going to take a look to replicate that same lawsuit in those states. California and Illinois were prominent there, but there were a number of states there, and we look forward to that continuing work. But probably most important is that the Public Service Commission in New York State has ordered an audit of Charter Communications, and that's the one that could be pretty damaging,
Of course, we are in a deep blue state of New York. We have a very self-professed progressive mayor and a very vocal governor. Governor was out there in Brooklyn over the summer really supporting you guys and tearing into Spectrum. What's your assessment of our elected officials and where have they been in this?
Yeah, listen, and it's nice to try to set me up, Joe, but I've been around a long time, and I know better than to bite the hand that feeds you on the radio station. But look, the governor is absolutely taking the right tact here, and we appreciate it. The mayor and the comptroller and a public advocate. We have a new city council. There's work to be done in New York City. If the mayor could have canceled the franchise, he would have done it. And he's known for some time, and the company's known for some time that he just can't do it. But the issue of, how this franchise structure is implemented in New York City, where a company has a monopoly, and you as a customer don't have a choice to be able to say, I want out of Spectrum, I want Cablevision, Altice, I want, Verizon. To not have the choice really weakened our position. Certainly, building union members in New York City, public sector, private sector, and our membership, of course, would have all canceled Charter in a heartbeat if they had a lot of options. So we need to work that, the franchise, and I think the mayor had indicated he put out a request for information on broadening the broadband, and so that was a shot across the bow that got their attention, and we're going to work closely with the city council going forward here.
So in the last 30 seconds that we have, talk directly to the membership, the families, and the supporters. What's your final message for them? Last 30 seconds.
Listen, I didn't want to ruin a Christmas that's already been ruined, in a New Year's. And the members of Local 3 have supported these strikers. And so to the extent that, if we could do any more, we would. We're doing everything that we can here to try to sustain them through a difficult period here with a company that I'm not sure is ever going to give up, but will forever be branded as, the poster child for corporate greed and union busting in the city of New York. And I don't think they're going to survive that at the end of the day. And so,
all right, Chris, I'm sorry, we got to leave it there.
Yeah,
thanks,
no problem.
Thanks,
Joe.
A lot.
Yeah, you hang in there.
Thank you. We've been speaking to Chris Erickson and the leadership of IBEW Local 3 as the Spectrum strike in New York continues in its 10th month. You're listening to Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz here on AM 970. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Labor Press on AM 970, The Answer. Now back to Labor Press with your hosts, Neil Chappell and Bill Holfeld.
Everybody's working for the weekend.
Welcome back to Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz here at AM 970 The Answer. I'm your host, Joe Maniscalco, senior editor at laborpress.org. I just want to let everybody know my great co-host, Bill Holfeld, is off this week because he's actually traveling in the Caribbean. And we miss Bill a lot, but he'll be back next week. And right now, we're going to turn to Ray Rogers. He's the head of the corporation campaign. And we've been talking about corporations on this show. And Ray is a great corporate fighter against corporate greed. And he's going to tell us a little bit about our own Senator Chuck Schumer and what's happening with the Real Estate Board of New York. Ray, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Joe. Glad to be here again. And as I always like to remind people that the Real Estate Board of New York, REBNY, really stands for the Real Estate Bullies of New York, ravaging every borough of New York City. And they are a plague on all New Yorkers.
Now, given that, you think that our own Democratic senator, representative, would be critical of that kind of group?
Well, you would think of that. And I've written Senator Schumer a letter about a week ago. And we're planning a protest rally against the real estate bullies and racketeers at their 122nd annual banquet, which is being held up at Midtown New York Hilton between 53rd and 54th Streets. That's on January 18th, Thursday night, from 6:15 to 7:45 p.m. To get more information, they can call me at 718-852-2808. Or look at our website, StopRebnyBullies.org.
And REBNY is actually going to be honoring the senator.
Yes. The senator is one of seven people that are receiving an honor. And so what I did is I wrote the senator a letter trying to explain to him why I thought this was a bad idea. And I mentioned in my letter that the fact is that the policies and practices of REBNY and what I refer to as the bullies and racketeers who head it are running roughshod over 99% and doing great harm to tenants, construction workers, small businesses, and their employees throughout your state, Senator Schumer, particularly New York City. Who is he cozying up to? Well, he's cozying up to the billionaire bullies that are involved in activity that's busting unions, trying to undermine all rent stabilization, that's not allowing the Small Business Job Survival Act to be passed so that we don't have all the 1,000 businesses a month shutting down and all the employees going with them. So there are many things. And they also, by the way, REBNY is the major bankroller of what we call the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference.
Right. Talk about that.
Well, what got me to send a letter to Schumer was I was writing him a letter, and then I also got a letter from Schumer, which a million other people probably got, asking for a donation to support this senator out in, I think it was Minnesota or Montana. Please send $5. We must take back the U.S. Senate. And yet here's Senator Schumer is sitting there giving credibility to the Real Estate Board of New York by accepting this award and going to their annual banquet. It's the big gala affair. Yet REBNY is bankrolling the Independent Democratic Conference, the IDC. And when I say bankrolling, they're bankrolling eight New York State senators who are Democrats but vote with Republicans on all, particularly on all real estate matters and on matters that are important to working people throughout the state. So this is a real problem. When I talk about protecting real estate interests, what is Schumer helping to protect? He's helping to protect the people, like the Rent Stabilization Association, but they're helping to protect REBNY and support REBNY and give REBNY credibility, who's trying to undermine all the rent stabilization, which more than 800,000 families depend upon it here in New York State. They also seek to keep the billions of dollars in corporate welfare, tax abatements and subsidies coming into these billionaire real estate developers, people like Related, people like Tishman Speyer, LaFrac organization, Two Trees Management. Let me add one thing here, Joe, for all the listeners out there, particularly in the building trades, so any unions for that matter, okay, anybody concerned about working people and what's happening. REBNY is the most powerful political lobby in the city and the state, and they are out to mine every worker, every labor union, anybody, any protections for people, unless you're part of the 1%. Who are the people running REBNY, okay, that I raised with Senator Schumer? I talked about the head of Related, Stephen Ross. He thinks workers are grossly overpaid. His net worth is $7.6 billion. He wants to build the rest of Hudson Yards. It's a $4 billion project, a building going up right now with some union labor. It's open shop. He wants to build the other 16 parts of this mega development project over the next decade, multi-billion dollar project, all open shop, which means more and more non-union labor.
Or as we call it here, broken shop.
A broken shop, exactly. And right, and get on these projects, right to work for less, no benefits. Fortunately, you know, there is a young fellow, a journeyman from the Sheet Metal Workers Local 28 that recently got elected on the executive board. His name is Marvin Tavares. He's out there every Thursday morning at 6 a.m. trying to rally the troops to walk, not to go on any more of these projects of Related at Hudson Yards. all the building trades unions. He's trying to get them to come together, you know, to be able to shut down these projects. Well, he's also, I'm talking to Marvin, I'm going to be out there with him at some of these 6 a.m. projects, but also to rally them around the idea of really taking on Rebney in a big way, the way that I'm trying to get the building trades unions to do. There's only one building trades union that has stood up and showed any guts, and that's Local 46 of the metallic laborers, the iron workers, Terry Moore. They're the only ones. I've tried to get meetings. I've said they'll call me back. Try to get meetings to sit down and talk to me about taking on the Real Estate Board of New York, which they all agree are the biggest force out there undermining the construction industry, construction workers. And yet you can't get these leaders of a lot of these different unions to sit down and just talk. You'd think they would at least talk about how do we take on Rebney? How do we take on in different ways? How do we take on these billionaire racketeers and bullies, these developers and these property speculators and these landlords? How do you take them on? Well, we got a damn good way to take them on. And look, I've got 36 political candidates that ran for New York City office, including Carlina Rivera, who are holding up my anti-Rebney brochure repudiating Rebney. They're on our website, and we look to get more of the candidates, both past and present, as well as these people running for state senate and assembly, doing the same thing.
And Ray, I just want to remind everybody that if you're not familiar with Rebney and you don't know exactly what they do, you produced a great animation called Bullies, Rebney Bullies, that anybody can go onto YouTube, just search for Rebney Bullies, and it's about a 5-minute cartoon, very entertaining, very funny, and very educational.
It's very hard-hitting. You can go to my website, StopRebneyBullies.org, and you can see it there, and use it any way you want. Anything on our website, use it any way that you want. You know, I was talking again about the bullies. I mentioned Stephen Ross with the related companies because he's a big focus right now, right? He's one of the top policymakers of Rebney. But just three others, just for an example. You've got Richard LaFrack of the LaFrack Organization, real estate tycoon and close personal friend of Donald Trump. He's worth $6.3 billion. Jerry and Rob Speier, they're worth $3.9 billion. David and Jed Walentis, Two Trees Management, they're worth $2.1 billion. Every one of these leaders of Rebney think that construction workers are grossly overpaid and they're treated like children. They're treated too softly. We got to take a hard stand. Well, it's time that the damn building trades all stood up and took a hard stand against Rebney and every other union in the city if they want to save rent stabilization and start protecting union workers.
So, Ray, in addition to that, our own center is going to be feted January 18th at this Rebney event. Instead of doing that, what would you like to see Senator Schumer doing in regard to Rebney?
Well, I suggested to Senator Schumer in my letter, which is also on the website, StopRebneyBullies.org, link up to the media section, and you'll see the description of when the rally is going to, the protest is going to take place, as well as my letter. I said in my last sentence of my letter, I said, Senator Schumer, perhaps you should seriously consider removing yourself from this or any other event that legitimize and helps fund Rebney. And when you're helping to do that, you're helping to fund the IDC and keep the Republicans in control of the Senate in this state, which is out to undermine anything that working people stand for and unions stand for.
So, Ray, talk more about the labor organized unions, their reticence to stand up to Rebney as you see it. What do you think is behind that? Is it a situation where, you know, they're afraid to kill the golden goose?
Well, I think they're being divided and conquered out there. You know, there's a great story in Labor Notes publication that talked about what Related is doing and how you've got one group of union workers doing work on this $4 billion project where all the other labor unions, for the most part, are being kept out of the project. The question is whether all the unions can come together and take on Related. Now, there's one way of taking on Related certainly is exactly what Marvin is doing, trying to get the workers out there, build solidarity so that no workers would show up. I mean, they still need union workers, but before we had 85-90% union workers here on construction in New York City, none of these big projects would be built unless you had a project labor agreement, okay? Now you might have 35%, 40%, 45%. Okay, this is what this is not me saying this. This is what union leaders are telling me. But then when I have a union leaders tell me, we're scared stiff. Well, let me tell you, Joe, the labor movement was not built on people being afraid of taking these robber barons on. It was built by people who have courage to stand up to organizations like Rebney. So I'm saying to every building trades leader, particularly out there right now, okay, sit down and talk with me, and let's talk about taking on Remedy and either greatly diminishing the political dominance of this institution or put them out of business. And yes, I mean put them out of business, just like on your show, they're trying to put the CWA workers out of business, they're trying to put the IBW Local 3 workers out of business when we talk about American Airlines and when we talk about Charter Communications, okay? Let's put Remedy out of business because they're the people behind a lot of this tax on organized labor in the city, in the state.
All right, Ray, I think we got to leave it there. Maybe in the meantime, some of those labor leaders will be joining you out there on January 18th. Right now, we're going to have to wrap it up, and we'll definitely invite you back again. You're listening to Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz. We've been speaking to Ray Rogers, head of the Corporation Campaign, Inc. Come on back after these messages for more Blue Collar Buzz on AM 970 The Answer.
You're listening to Labor Press on AM 970, The Answer. And now back to Labor Press with your hosts, Neil Chappell and Bill Holfeld.
Oh, every moment just to keep a job, I gotta find my way through the hustle and the sounds of the city pounding in my brain.
Welcome back to Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz here on AM 970 The Answer. I'm your host, Joe Maniscalco, senior editor of LaborPress.org. And right now, joining us is Lou Levin. And he's going to be telling us about the 41st Annual National Labor and Management Conference coming up in February, which is happening in Hollywood, Florida. Lou, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe.
So people who are not familiar with the annual National Labor Management Conference, give us a rundown and tell us why it's so important.
The National Labor Management Conference is its 41st year this year at the Diplomat Resort and Spa, Hollywood, Florida. And every year we've been attracting between 350 to 450 participants from labor unions and management from across the country. Of course, heavily from the East Coast because it's easier to get to Florida from the East Coast than from the West Coast. But participating in this and speaking at these conferences are a number of international union labor leaders, leaders of unions which have a great deal of support from their members in the construction industry, in the white-collar industry, etc. But more important than that, we talk about the issues that are presenting themselves each year to the leadership. What are they? Well, in the pension and welfare area, it's a critical area for the construction trades because they're all finding difficulty up until this year with making pension payments out of a diminishing fund.
Right.
In addition to that, we have problems with safety, enforcement of safety. We have problems with the whole minimum wage question for the non-construction trades, and that comes up regularly. There are issues about government enforcement and which agency because of the constantly changing enforcement from the agencies themselves. The PBGC, for example, which has been running out of money. We've always looked at the PBGC to make up the shortfall when a pension fund went belly up. The PBGC now is looking to Congress for more money in order to bail out the unions. This is something that's not only happening to unions, but it's happening also to many small employer groups, non-union employer groups. So these issues come up. We also have a very important discussion on health care, because as you know, health care has become a critical issue and draining many of the welfare funds, because the cost of health care is mounting, and the welfare funds were set up usually with a 2 or 3 year contract, and as you begin to spend more and more money on taking care of the members' needs, you have less and less money left over, and you have to go back and renegotiate. When you renegotiate usually by increasing the contribution to the welfare fund and taking less money home.
Lou, before we go any further, why don't we let people know, give us some of the names of some of the speakers that are going to appear.
We have the president of the Laborers International Union, Terry O'Sullivan. We have Mike Rose, Chief of Staff, International Association of Machinists. Lonnie Stevenson, International President of the Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Christopher Shelton, International President of Communication Workers of America. We have a number of others who are confirming. We have a full program, and it runs for 4 days, including discussion hours afterwards. It has been always a draw. We've had maximum attendance at all the meetings. We have people from the American Medical Association. We have people from the American Podiatric Medical Association. We have the Nurses Association people come. We always make sure that we have a well-rounded discussion program. We never bore the people because they always come up with questions we never anticipated. And that's always a critical part of the discussion. What do the people want? What do the attendees want? And we always ask them beforehand, and we give them a paper to fill out when they finish, to fill out, tell us what you expect from the conference. What did you get? So we know for next year what we want to put in. It's been an ongoing proposition. I said 41 years, a long time.
Well, Lou, on this very show, we've been talking about the spectrum strike here in New York that's been going for 10 months. And a central issue there is pensions. Is the corporation trying to obliterate these pensions. You've been around for many, many years. What's your take on pensions? And, given that we bailed out the financial institutions, why can't we bail out these pensions?
Well, I'm going to answer it the only way I know how. It's called politics. I don't think the Congress of the United States right now is going to let itself be led into this morass because they don't know what's involved. And you're going to have to go through all the Taft-Hartley funds in this country to figure out who is viable and who's not viable. And the same thing with the cities. Remember, Detroit went belly up. A number of others are sitting and going to go belly up shortly. The Congress of the United States has to face a very serious reality right now. Is it to bail out these funds, to bail out the cities? You know, we're right now with trillions of dollars in debt, 20 trillion, 21 trillion. It's going to put us further in debt. There's always been a feeling that when Taft-Hartley, Landrum Griffin, and ERISA were created, when ERISA came into being, it was the responsibility of the labor and management side to make sure that they funded it completely and carefully funded all the needs. Failure to do so is a responsibility of the trustees. And if the trustees didn't plan ahead and didn't do a good job of analyzing where they're going down the road, we know they have problems with investments, but they should have taken care of it. That's the attitude of many of the congressional people I've talked to.
And what are your thoughts on it? As you know, this country is facing a very severe, dark retirement crisis when people are going to go into retirement with nothing.
Well, already that's happened already.
Yeah.
There have been a number of cases where they've gone into retirement and there wasn't enough to bail them out and not enough to pay them. It's happened in a number of funds. And if we take this on as a total responsibility, then let me ask a simple question. Who is going to take on the responsibility of paying for the funds or contributing to the funds if they know somebody's going to bail them out? There has to be a very careful evaluation made by many of the consultants. And I blame a lot of consultants for this in terms of not telling the administrators what they were getting into. You lead the members down a garden path. They got to be known. If it's going to get $100 a month, they're going to get $500 a month. And they're going to be guaranteed the $500 a month, then there has to be some understanding that this was a guarantee between the membership and the fund administrator. But if the fund administrator didn't get the proper guidance from the consultants, he's at fault, and all the trustees are at fault for not looking at it.
Of course, the people that, different companies that that tried to decide to drop out, that only accelerates the process of these combined plans. Can you give us one or two remedies? What would you like to see happen?
I don't think any employer should be able to drop out of a contribution to a fund and get away with it. Actually, he cannot. He's got responsibility. But the law requires that he make this continue to make contributions. The enforcement of that has been very, very poor. And so a lot of the smaller companies bail out. They're not going to make a contribution anymore. And what happens is they leave it to three or four companies left in the fund who can no longer support it by themselves. And there isn't enough money in the fund to continue. And I've seen a number of these funds go belly up.
Lou, we got about 2 minutes. Why don't you just give people who are not familiar with you, give it a little bio.
On me?
Yeah.
Well, I started out working for the CIO in the old days. That was the 1950s. I then went to the Central Labor Council, worked under Harry Van Arsdale. Before that, I worked under Michael Quill. And then in 1966, I became Industrial Commissioner of the State of New York until 1976 when I left. I worked under Nelson Rockefeller, Malcolm Wilson, Hugh Carey. And then I went on to Group Health Insurance as Deputy Board Chairman. And from there, I went on to Blue Cross as a Senior Vice President. And in 1991, I retired from Blue Cross and came to the New York College of Podiatric Medicine as its president and CEO, which I've been on since that date. It's now 26 years.
And do you mind saying how old you are?
How old I am?
Yeah.
I'm not as old as Methuselah, and not as young as my great great grandson. Did that tell you?
I think I know the answer, but I just want to congratulate you and just, yeah. Don't ever fully retire, right?
No. That's a death knell.
Yeah, you got to keep going. Got to keep up the fight.
Got to keep going.
All right, thanks a lot. We're going to leave it there. We've been speaking to Lou Levin, and he's helping to bring about the 41st Annual National Labor and Management Conference coming in February down in Hollywood, Florida. And please go out online and get tickets for that. I think that does it for another episode of Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz. Just want to remind everybody, follow us on Twitter at Labor Press NY or write to us at bcb@laborpress.org. And definitely check out laborpress.org for daily labor news. And don't forget to come back next week at Sunday night at 9 p.m. for more Blue Collar Buzz here on AM 970. Yeah.